20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It has been way too long since we've had the opportunity to talk to Dusty Evely here on the podcast. Obviously, you get to hear him, Steve, and Sarah on our Wednesday show, and we've had Dusty on the radio show recently, but this has not happened in far too long. We had to remedy that. Dusty, it's great to be chatting with you. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, man. Mentioned you, you know, it's summer. We got lots of schedules are a little busy, a little all over the place, but things are good, man. Just trying to survive the heat, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Getting ready for vacation, which is why I'm recording some of these podcasts in advance. But it's been really fun because sometimes we get so in the thick of things that I don't always take the time to schedule people on and just get kind of the thoughts of all the other stuff that's going on in the Packers verse and just talk to some friends that I haven't been able to talk to in a while. So I'm very much looking forward to this conversation, and it's just been fun to catch up with a lot of people recently. So hope everyone else enjoys this as much as I know I'm going to. You've done so much work this offseason on so much different stuff, looking at this Packers offense, these wide receivers. We're going to jump into all of it, but I want to give you a little bit of a softball as we kick things off here. And I just want to get your thoughts on the Packers offseason. Just kind of, I don't even want to give you any sort of runway up to it. Just anything that's kind of on your mind from this Packers offseason, anything that you're excited about, anything that you're just like, eh, it's fine, whatever. I'll let you go in any freaking direction that you want.
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting. I wrote about this a little bit, but the direction the offense is going is something that every season is something that I kind of think about. You know, what do these pieces mean? What does all that mean? I think there's been some breadcrumbs laid down there, but I like the, you know, going wide receiver first round was awesome. You know, that was, and who they got to is kind of a little different from where they had gone. I like, I think what they're doing with the interior of the offensive line. I mean, the overpay of Banks. Like, it's not my money. I don't care. He will be, I don't know if he's going to be amazing. He's going to be a perfectly fine player. And I think is something that they've not had, in the interior. I mean, Elgton Jenkins, I like, but he's not really a mauler. So to go kind of again that direction, then picking up a guy like Belton, you got a couple of maulers that maybe can move inside. Like it's been, you know, relatively quiet. We've had the weird Jenkins stuff, you know, we had the Jair stuff, but even that, like, buddy, we've been seasoning the war. Like, this is nothing. Like, this is not drama. These are throw-offs, man. So it's been a nice, quiet offseason with some nice little, I think some cool, I like what they've done. I guess I enjoyed the draft. I know Savion Williams, I'm a little, wasn't crazy about it just because I don't think I'm crazy about the player, but I'm excited about the prospect of the player. So sure. At this point, I talk myself into anything, but it's been a fun offseason. It's been, I think, a little different. That maybe signals some changes, but I've been a fan of what they've done so far.
I want to go back to Aaron Banks for a moment because I do think there's this overwhelming sentiment of like he's fine and he's way better than, you know, what he's ultimately replacing in Josh Myers, meaning that Jenkins goes to center and obviously Myers is gone. There doesn't seem to be a ton of overwhelming enthusiasm of like, oh, he's just great. It might be great because of the player he's ultimately replacing, but maybe not great overall. I did the whole breakdown of him grading every snap. I watched like the first 8 games and I was really, really excited. I'm like, oh, they found something. Like they knew, like, whatever. And then like the next like 7-8 games was pretty nondescript, slight negative, whatever. I'm like, all right, this is fine. And that's, you kind of got that same feeling back. Do you think, again, former second round pick, there is some good stuff on tape. Do you think there is a world in which Green Bay just knows what they're doing here and they maybe did find a diamond in the rough, somebody that can be a legitimately really good guard? Or is this probably just addition by subtraction and Josh Myers and they probably overpaid a little bit? Again, regardless of if it's our money or not, maybe just overpaid a little bit for Aaron Banks.
Yeah, I mean, I think I fall in the latter camp. It's one of those like that, you know, the things we don't see from the outside in terms of like talking to the guy, talking to the player, all of that stuff. Cause there is, I mean, what we've seen, I mean, you saw the same stuff that was the good's really good. I mean, the good pass pro is tremendous. Like he's for a big dude, he's a good mover. Nice. He can hit people, he can move people in space. So you see those and you'll put on, I mean, like, not even just plays, he'll have games where he's that dude. You're like, all right, this is it. And then he'll just have moments or he'll have games where like he forgets he's supposed to climb to the second level, or he's trying, he's pulling and he just completely whiffs on, like, not even like a quick little cornerback, like whiffs on a lineman, just completely misses the path. And so, I mean, that's the thing for me. And I mean, I guess that's the story with a lot of these guys is this, can they be consistent? It's golf, right? Like, everyone can be good if they're consistent all the time, but like, you're not. And so does that change under, you know, what we believe is a good offensive line coach, good infrastructure there? Now, I think, you know, the Niners had a pretty good spot there too. So maybe there's not that jump, but I think maybe there is a feeling of, we can get this guy in the building. We feel like there's a couple things, like a couple small points that if we just coach up a little bit, then he's going to be a monster. Like, that wouldn't shock me in the least, because they do have a good coaching staff on that side of the ball, I think. But that is the highlights are there. The movement skills are there. The size is there. When you see him latch and drive, I mean, he's really, really good. It's just down to down, game to game consistency isn't there. So if he can clean that up, well, that's a coaching, I don't think it's an effort thing. So if that's just a coaching thing, if he has the ability to be more consistent, I mean, that can be something big. It's just, can he be consistent? And some guys just, it's hard to harness that. I mean, if you could harness that, every single guy would just be, oh, be more consistent. That's your coaching point. Just be better. Do that every time. Like, you can't tell a guy that. That's not going to work. But
right.
I think there's a chance. There's a chance that there's something there, something very good there. I mean, I think worst case scenario, he's fine. I think he's a useful player either way. And I think you can get out after 2 years. But best case scenario, yeah, you got a real mover on the inside.
And I think the worst case scenario, like you said, he's still a good guard. You just can't have enough of those guys. Is it maybe worth 4 years, 77? Probably not. But I'll always take good offensive linemen on my team and as many as I can possibly get. And that's usually a good philosophy to have one way or the other. I think it's going to be a value add for that offensive line. Just how high of a value and how good he can get, that kind of remains to be seen. In that vein, one of the things that you've done as of late is taking a real deep dive into this Packers team and more specifically what they can look like in 2025. Obviously don't want to spoil the entire article that's out there. Definitely go check it out. Acme Packing Company, I'm assuming it's over at.
Yeah.
acmepackingcompany.com. But kind of go and just walk us through pieces of this, of what you've kind of done to put this together and maybe some of the highlights of what you've seen on tape.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest stuff is just, you know, you look at what the team looked like last year. So I did an article a few weeks ago that was this, what were the changes from 2023 and 2024? And some of that was run game, pullers, all that stuff. And then you're kind of looking, okay, who'd they add? And so, I mean, the alarm bell started going off for me when they drafted, again, Golden in the first round. They lost, you know, Watson's going to be out, we assume, for at least the first half of the season. Who knows with the way that some of that stuff's going. But he was, I mean, Andy, you watch every single snap. I know you grade, you do all that stuff. I'm not crazy in thinking, I think some of Watson's downfield blocking fell off a little there. He wasn't the lockdown blocker he was this past year.
Agreed.
Wicks was. But one of the things that Watson is their best at is that, like, linebacker cracker. Like, on the outside pitch stuff, Watson could do that. And even if Watson was not the lockdown guy this past year, and again, you have weird blips and stuff like that, he's still very good. I think he's still above average blocker. So you get him and Wicks. And so you get these formations, you get the two of them, you come on either side. You can't do that with the guys they have now. So they took Golden. Wicks is great. No one else can really do this. Like, we know Jaden Reed will try, bless his heart, but he's too small. Like, he can't hold up there. Melton's the same way. If he's going to end up playing offense, Dobbs is, Dobbs is good. I think Dobbs is better than he gets credit for, but he's not great. And so if you're looking at this from an offense that likes to kind of build everything, base everything out of the run, these new pieces, what do they mean? So, okay, Golden, the alarm bell's going off. Again, now they got Banks. You drafted Belton, the big guy who I think probably is, they want to win that guard spot is my assumption. You can run. The problem with them before, they couldn't run. I mean, last year they couldn't move people up front. Well, now theoretically you got people movers, but you don't have wide receivers that can block. And so the way to remedy that would be power spread. You spread out, you go, everyone's not like, you're not Tennessee stuff here, man. We're not like everyone out to the boundary, but it's fewer condensed formations. You're spreading everyone out. You got one tight end formation. Although they went heavier 11 personnel last year. I think part of that was because Musgrave was out.
Yeah.
But I think they could lean a little more into that stuff. Now you got a running game that can be effective with just your line, because you got these maulers you've got there. You got your wide receivers who don't need to block anyone. And now you've got, I mean, there's been talk all offseason, I think going into last year as well, Jordan Love Jordan Love in the run game. And he was injured last year. They've got stuff in the playbook. We've seen stuff in the playbook that is zone read, triple option stuff. He just never pulled the ball because he just wasn't healthy. And so if we know that stuff is in the playbook, we know they're getting bigger on the line. We know they got wide receivers that can't block. Reading the tea leaves, and this would be a pretty vast departure from LaFleur. He has been a very condensed guy. I think every year under LaFleur, the formation has been getting tighter. NFL Next Gen had that stat. So this would be a pretty big departure for him. And this trend of heavier up front, condensed formations, is where the league has been going, two tight end stuff. If this looks, this is me talking myself into it, Andy. This is a zig where everyone's zagging. This one's, everyone's getting condensed. You now have the pieces to maul people up front with light boxes, because you're not going to bring everyone into the box into the condensed formations. That's the problem with those. You're spreading everything out, and now you can just kind of go to town. It's a world that Love, you know, played in college. You've got speed, you've got dynamic players, and you've got, the biggest thing is the movers up front. If you can move people up front with five dudes and a tight end in the run game, you can spread wide receivers out. You're not losing anything. So that's the gist of it. There's some stuff I did not put in there that I thought about after the fact. I should have written that down. But that's the gist of it, is less condensed, more power spread, more love as a runner. Feels like what could be the next iteration of this offense with the pieces that they kind of added and left over the offseason.
So walk us through this power spread. Are you still in 11 here? Are you having a tight end in? Or are you looking at some 10 stuff where you go four wides and spread it out even more?
I think we're going all 11. Not all 11, but more heavy 11. I think last year they were 67% 11, which I think was middle of the league, if I'm not mistaken. So lean a little higher into 11. You can keep Kraft. I mean, you could even, if you want to, you leave him. A lot of the teams that are doing like power spread, say like the Eagles, the Colts, a lot of power spread stuff, they still leave a tight end in. So Tucker Kraft would be attached to the formation. You can still use him as a receiver or a blocker. So you've got basically like an 11 look. You got the five linemen, you've got a tight end offset, you've got a running back in the backfield, and you got your three wide receivers split out past the hash marks. It's none of like the, not none of, they're still going to have some of it, but like whatever, like the nasty splits where it's like, you know, everyone's within 5 yards of the tackle. Like, those would still be in there, but that'd be a less a big part of their offense. Everyone's out past the hashes at that point.
Gotcha. Makes sense. For those of you at home, 11, one running back, one tight end, three wide receivers. 10 would be one running back, zero tight ends, four wide receivers. If you're wondering how to remember that, how I do it at least is alphabetical order, yep. RTW. That's how I always do it. So R, that first column is an R. If you have a number in there, that means there's, if it's a one, so 11 would be, it's R and T. 11 would be one and one, one running back, one tight end. And then your leftover out of five is three. So you have three wide receivers. So RTW, alphabetical order. And then you added the columns together. So if you're at home and you're not familiar with 11, 10, 21, whatever personnel they're in, just know it always goes in that order. We move away from that. I just always want to remind myself that everyone that listening is not, you know, thinking on personnel package groups as we talk about some of this stuff. But I do think that's a really interesting idea. I walked even through some potential. I did a whole thing on like random, unique and fun formations that they could potentially do. I walked through some 10 personnel stuff that I think would be fun, just getting four wides out there. And again, same thing, going with the maulers up front on the offensive line, just letting Josh Jacobs cook a little bit on the inside. If you get the numbers advantage, I think that could be fun. But I do think there's a lot of validity to this, where you do get these guys spread out a little bit more and just let Josh Jacobs work with a bigger offensive line and see if you can do it. Maybe again, I think early in the year, you know, what I would like to do, and you mentioned it, is I'd like to almost show Jordan Love keeping on a few more of those to begin with. Even if it's something that you go away with a little bit more, just putting it on tape in week one, week two, a little bit more to show that he will do it, just makes you have to keep that defensive end a little bit more honest to Jordan Love. And once that starts happening, you don't even necessarily need to do it anymore. But that just, that frees up Jacobs, gives you a little bit more of that numbers advantage. I do think that there's something there that they could really utilize with that.
Man, if they're spreading and it's light boxes and you got Marshawn Lloyd, like a true home run hitter back there,
you can
like crease them with five dudes up front, they're cooking with gas now, brother.
Even as you know too, Dusty, do some pony stuff, you know, get the three wide, do that play where they motion, you can motion, heck, let's put Josh Jacobs in motion him out wide. You know, you've got Wicks and Wicks and Kraft out wide. And, you know, you can motion behind that. You can throw it out to, you know, Jacobs, and it's a screenplay. You know, maybe you've got Matthew Golden just running a nine on the other side to be a decoy. Or if you like it, it's just a one-on-one and he wins with that first step. You could take that shot. add the numbers over there. Then, you know, fake that, you either fake the handoff to the running back. If it's Lloyd in, let him crease it. If he's got the numbers, if not, let Love keep it and let him run for a few yards. There's a lot of options out of that play where you could do some very fun stuff, I think. We'll be right back.
Oh, I mean, and that's the style that I've drawn up stuff with. I mean, Savion Williams, for I think all of his issues, he lined up in the backfield, man. So if you run some of that stuff and you're running him like orbit, that little orbit, like the behind the quarterback motion out of there, release to the flat to Savion Williams, you've got a dude who can do some damage with the ball in his hands. And then you're running again, fake, you got a fake Josh Jacobs and you got maybe a golden on little vertical, like run pass option, like glance route. Listen, man, it's been real fun to dream on this, some of this stuff.
Even I'm telling you, even as a wrinkle, again, I'm talking like three times per year or whatever. Even as a wrinkle, put Jordan out wide as the decoy on the left side. Put Savion, you know, at quarterback, and now again, he can throw the little screen to the outside. I'm not worried about that. If he still has the numbers to the outside, throw the screen to the outside, and now all of a sudden you've got a Marshawn Lloyd, Savion Williams backfield where, again, the defensive end stays with Savion. All right, I'm going to hand off to Lloyd. You've got a numbers advantage there. You know, just have Jordan Love run to the sidelines and get out of that play as quick as possible. And if Savion keeps it, I'm all for that as well. Like there's some very unique things that they could potentially do with that and some very maneuverable pieces that I think are very exciting. I'm all for it. You also wrote another article of what the changes, and you kind of, I think, alluded to this a little bit in our conversation here, but what the changes at wide receiver could mean. You talked obviously about Matthew Golden, and again, not maybe having the blocking wide receivers changes this up a little bit, but maybe talk about that just a little bit more. And maybe more importantly, if Matthew Golden and Savion Williams maybe can't be those blocking wide receivers, what can they bring to the table and how would you utilize those two in more specifically?
I mean, Golden could, and that's whether, you know, Williams is interesting because I feel like he has the body for it and he could block, but the first year is going to be tough. Like, I don't bank on him being a blocker out of the gate. Golden, with his speed and I think his ability to win outside, he can be a takeoff guy. Like, it doesn't matter, man. Like, just run that way and you take the cornerback with you and then we'll run to your side or we won't. And then you get in front of him and you do a little hand fight dance stuff. Like, Golden, I'm not concerned about that at all. And I mean, and some of it is like, how does the offense operate with some of those guys? Cause there was, and we saw, I don't want to bring this up because everyone brings this up, but like the end around of Jaden Reed, where it was on fourth down, right? That got blown up. Well, it gets blown up because they're running it to Bo Melton's side. Like, Bo Melton can't block, and they know he can't block. Why you run it to his side? That becomes more prevalent with this. And so now if you're looking at our third and short, if we're going for more on fourth down, where can we run it? If we're running condensed, we want to bring bodies in. Well, you're probably bringing tight ends in or you're spreading out, or you're going to have to pass, or you're running up the middle because you're running where you can, right? You're bringing in Tucker Kraft. He's doing something. You can still bring in Wicks as an insert, but really out of who they have now, that's the only guy they have is Wicks. That's like an above
average. What about Malik Heath? How do you feel about him as a blocker? If he makes the team, how do you feel? Like, can he do some of that stuff on the outside?
He can. Like, he's a little more hit and miss. I feel like he has a harder time. I have to go back and watch him a little more closely, but from what I remember seeing of him out there, he's fine, but there's an inconsistency there. And he doesn't have great feet on that. And so a savvy guy can get around him pretty easily. He has a hard time kind of anchoring in. So like if he's going downhill, if he's being asked, if it's fourth and one, wash out that safety, dig out that safety. I think he can do that in like a condensed thing. But once that's spread out a little bit more, that's what Watson was so good at. Like, go to the linebacker. If the linebacker's gone, he's cracking the safety, that adjustment. They don't have guys that can do some of that stuff now. So I think it limits what you can do in that run game, especially like the outside run game, I think, with the receivers they have, which is when I started to think about the power spread stuff. Is if you're running condensed formation world, the whole idea of condensed formation of motion, the way LaFleur uses that, is to maneuver the people in the positions you want them to get better kind of blocking angles on a lot of that stuff. Like, it's what it is. But if receivers can't win unblocked, what's the point? That stuff. So I think it limits them, I think, offensively as far as what you can run. You're almost telegraphing. If you're running a tight and it's fourth and one, it's third and one, and you've got Bo Melton and you've got Jaden Reed over here, like, okay, we know you're either not running to that side or we can win with two guys. Like, that doesn't matter. So I think that's the limitation I think we run into at this point.
does Christian Watson need an ACL to block? Can he go out there now and still do the blocking stuff? Can we just activate him week one?
Yeah, that looks like he can run for two now, doesn't he? Like, I think he's fine right now.
Yeah, I think you can do that now, right? You can just activate him. We don't need any routes. Just go out there and block when we need him to. I am interested to see how some of that stuff works out. I'm with you. I think they're still going to find ways and creative ways to use Golden and hopefully Savion Williams as well. But it does bring up a very intriguing situation. Again, hopefully Watson can just be back by like week 8, 9, 10, whatever it is, and add a little bit more of that to the team, or maybe somebody steps up. And I'm glad you did bring up Dontayvion Wicks in that regard as well, because I know a lot of people look at the drops. We know he's a great route runner, but I don't think still what a lot of people recognize is just how tenacious he is as a blocker on the outside. Man, he gives everything in that. I'm not saying he's like Hines Ward or anything, but he deserves a lot of credit for the way that he goes out there and blocks every down.
He's a dog, man. Like, there's at least two touchdowns this past year that don't happen if he's not blocking, like locking a dude up 15 yards downfield. Like, he's, if you're not, and that's some of them were even after, I always go back to he had the fumble and Aaron Jones like holds his head up. Like, he kind of got down on himself. He had one, I can't remember this game, this past season, he had a drop. And then like the next series had just an absolute monster block. Like, he's just, whether he's getting the ball, whether he's dropping the ball, like, he's not allowed to affect him. Just watch him block. He is so much fun to watch.
I totally agree. It's really, really fun. And it's why for me, he had a positive grade for me this past season, in a season where, you know, as a actual receiver catching the ball, a lot of drops, a lot of negatives on that, but the stuff he does in run blocking is super, super valuable. And it shows up a ton on tape. As we kind of continue with this offense a little bit, I know that you hate talking offense, so I'm sorry for asking you all these offensive questions. I don't even know like the right way to frame this in any real regard of like, other than how do you put together expectations for Jordan Love this season after we've seen 2 years as a starter, a first half of 2023 that's fine. Yeah. But remember, like, at the trade deadline in 2023, like, Brian Gutekunst basically came out and said, like, the second half of 2023 is going to be really important for Jordan. Basically, like, indicating, like, yeah, we need to see a little bit more if we need to know, like, he's going to be the long-term starter, whatever. Like, there were still questions at that trade deadline of what he was going to be. Then he just goes nuclear, and it's like, oh, my God, he has arrived. He is it. He is the one, and we're in a really great spot here. And then, of course, the NFC divisional round game, he mostly plays fine, but not great as the pick towards the end. And then in 2024, you have a full season just marred by MCL, groin, thumb. And not only that, but a training camp where he misses practice due to the contract issue and a ton of missed practice time during the course of the season because of all said injuries. And it's just like an incomplete. It's really difficult to grade, other than the fact that even with all that, it wasn't bad. It was still solid, fine, whatever you want to call it. But how now do you go into this year three as a starter, year six in the NFL with an unbelievable flash at the end of 2023, a completely injured 2024. And now we're just like, I think he's really good, but what are your expectations for him in 2025 based on what we know so far?
I mean, they're high. I mean, all the stuff you mentioned is valid. It's tough to fully evaluate a guy when there's all those things going on, because you're trying to look at it, some of it from like a numbers perspective, and the whole time it's like, well, they've had all the drops and, you know, still some guys running wrong routes a little bit, which kind of plagues them. I think every team has it to some extent, but I see it more because I'm watching more of the Packers in that regard. But I mean, I think when I watch him, I watch his process. You know, you watch the I'm going to say his footwork's really good. And whenever I say his footwork's really good, people are like, well, he throws off his back foot. Like, that's not what I'm talking about. His feet are tied to the route? Are his feet tied to the concept? And man, they are. And like, you watch him, or you watched him at Utah State, like, that stuff, he was running four verts and meshed 85% of the time. It wasn't progression. It was, if he that was guy's open,
an offense.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like, I'll just throw it. If that guy's open, there's no footwork. And so the fact that he's there at all is crazy. I remember when he came in that Eagles game, that was okay. This is totally different from the guy we had seen, and that's progressed. So if you just watch, that's the first thing I'm looking at. What are his feet doing? What's the concept? What are they asking him to do? Why is he looking to this direction? And then what are his feet doing? And he's so smooth with the transition to footwork. He's always in a spot to throw. And you know, sometimes that's off platform, but when he's going through his footwork, like, for the most part, like, he's in a position to throw. Like, he's going through the reads. He typically goes to the right side of the field most of the time. Now, he'll miss stuff sometimes, and I'll get to that in a minute. But for the most part, if he's looking like this is what pre-snap and immediate post-snap is telling me to go. This is where I'm looking first, and then I will rule it out and go somewhere else. And even if he does that, his feet are good. And so that's the biggest thing for me is how are his eyes? I mean, me and you talked about that right after they drafted him. Like, yep. I'm concerned about his eyes. He wasn't seeing linebackers. Like, he would just stare down the side of the field. And I think there's still some of that to his game, but for the most part, he doesn't have that. Like, he goes through progressions. He goes through reads really, really well. The accuracy, I think, is always going to be something, especially like it's not the deep accuracy. Deep accuracy has been fine for the most part. Some underthrown balls, but like everyone's going to underthrow a 60 yarder like at points. That just happens. But it's his the short to intermediate outbreakers is something like he just has never been good at. And so stuff like that, is he ever going to be good at that? I don't know. I mean, I think there's always going to be issues with accuracy. So maybe you can make it a little better there, but I just assume he is who he is there. But as far as like command of the offense, where he's looking, where he's throwing, there's times he'll get fooled. He had that terrible pick against the Texans that was on like a two-man stick concept. Yep. And he just read it completely wrong and stared it down and got picked off. But like, those are rare. So I think my belief, and I think the other thing I'll add to this, and I've been talking for a bit, I apologize.
Go for it. Yeah, this is your show, my man.
I think after he came back injured, and so there's a few things that happened when he came back injured, but one of the big things, I think, was I don't think he was comfortable doing a short game, short and intermediate stuff. I don't think his knee was there, his groin was bad, all the stuff that happened. They went deep stuff, like more often than not. Like it was a lot of seven-step drop because he knew I can settle back and I can hit this. Like I can chuck it. I'll have a little more time. I'll be back beyond the line. I don't think he was comfortable three-step planning and throwing. Like I just don't think he was. And so a lot of that stuff was gone. And so I think they went a little deeper this past year, and that was kind of stretched what maybe he should have been doing, what they should have been doing on offense. But I think it got him to a spot. I think he got more comfortable with that stuff. And then a lot, they got brought crossers back as well from that. They kind of got rid of crossers for a bit. Just wasn't working. And I think that stuff, they got it working back in. I think he threw those extremely well. So, I mean, I am of the mind, I think some of the stuff, there's always going to be some downside. Again, some of the accuracy stuff, you're going to have one or two throws per game. Probably we're like, well, he missed that one. Well, that's a sail or a dirt, or it usually sails wide. The ones that concern me are the short intermediate out cutters that he will leave to the inside shoulder, because that stuff will get picked off. I don't think he's been killed by that yet, but man, at some point he's going to. But for the most part, I mean, I have nothing but the highest of hopes for him. Again, a couple throws here and there, I think will be bad every game, probably about every game. But I have very high hopes just in his process, how he's running this offense, knowing where to go and all that. I'm very high in him.
Walk me through the short intermediate stuff and going to deep ball instead. Because I would assume if you're feeling it a little bit, if your groin's bothering you, if your MCL is bothering you, whatever, I would kind of prefer a 3-5-step drop, get the ball out of my hands, not have to do as much getting back in my back in my drop, and not having to have the play develop quite as much. And knowing that if I'm going deeper, there's more opportunity for pass rush, which I might need to avoid or spin away from or whatever. I would think, you know, I go back to when, you know, Rodgers in 2014 had some of the leg stuff, did a little bit more pistol, did a little bit more shotgun, but it was a lot more, if I remember correctly, at least, kind of quick passing game, mm-hmm. get the ball out of my hands, let my weapons do some of the heavy lifting. So why in this case would Jordan maybe want to go a little bit more seven step, throw down the field a little bit more and do that rather than maybe do the short intermediate stuff?
To me, I think it's his gait. I mean, Rodgers could do that. 2014, that run was incredible because that was the calf, right? He had the calf issue, and it was everything is quick stuff. Love has has a longer gait, and I feel like the shorter stuff, it's the footwork is good, but it's a little choppier, a little more intentional. When he's backing up in that seven step, it's more like kind of gliding steps. And then even beyond that, I mean, I think if you look at a lot of the quick game stuff, the way they've got this built now, for Rodgers, it was quick game. It was so much mirrored stuff. It was two-man stick to this side. It was one-man stick to this side, and that was it. And so it was pick the side. It's going to be three-step regardless. The way they've got this built now is usually three-step to five-step. And so if he's going right side, you know, typically read the usually depends on the concept, but if he's reading the three-step side first, then he's going to transition to five. You got the quick kind of choppy steps because then you got to transition. You're kind of dropping back to three. You got to almost like half plan if it's going to be there. If it's not going to be there, you got to transition. But there's a little more movement in terms of that. Whereas if it's like 5-7 and both concepts, like both sides of the field, you're kind of running, or I mean, the seven step stuff, it's deep. And so you're picking one of two guys generally anyway. you can get those kind of long loping gait back instead of those like kind of choppy feet and having transition your footwork. So I don't know if that makes sense. In my brain, that makes sense. And I know they were chucking a little deeper. And so that's where my brain connected those, but I have no idea if that's right or not.
No, it makes a ton of sense. And that's I think a perfect answer. And I am just intrigued to see I think it's impossible to know exactly how much those injuries affected him, how much the lack of practice time affected him, and just the rhythm and timing with the wide receivers. I'm so interested to see just how all of that looks, training camp, regular season, et cetera. And I'm with you. I could not be more excited to watch Jordan. Doesn't mean anything because it's OTA mini camp, but he was awesome. Like he, like I said, maybe missed one throw per day, slightly, nothing egregious. I talked to Paul Breddle the other day. He kind of was more on Carrington Valentine and Bill Huber's side of things, where he thought that the one throw to Carrington maybe could have been picked. If so, that was his one interceptable pass the entire time in the practices that were open. I just thought he went through all of his progressions, knew his checks, knew his audibles, like knew everything. It looked just really, really clean, very veteran. And I'm hoping that obviously carries over into camp and into the season as well. But I'm very bullish on what he can become this upcoming season. One of the things that has taken some of the talk on social media as we're recording this on June 26th has been this idea. I forget who put it out. I don't know if it was PFF or 30.
It was PFF. Yeah.
PFF. Okay. The top 10 coaches in the NFL, and Matt LaFleur was not on said list of top 10 coaches in the NFL. It's a good list of coaches. I would personally put Matt LaFleur on any list of 10 coaches that I were putting together. If I remember correctly, whoever was 10th on the list was, it was Stefanski.
It was Stefanski.
Yeah. And I'm like, even if you want to put the top nine on, I think like there were good arguments maybe to be made for all of the top nine. We could make arguments against a lot of them, I think too. But like, to me, at least LaFleur needs to be on at number 10 over Kevin Stefanski at this point in time. But regardless, A, your thoughts on LaFleur not being in the top 10, and B, maybe your arguments for why he should be on the top 10, unless you maybe disagree. Maybe you think he shouldn't be in the top 10.
Should be 32. Andy stinks. So I actually did I was like, how do I feel about these? I think he's top 10, but how do I feel about these? So I did like a little color-coded spreadsheet because what else am I doing? I had him... I mean, definitely inside the top 10. I had him at 6. I'm this is probably somewhat homerish of me, but I had him 6. If you want to just put him at 10, if you want to just put him at 10, I don't care. He belongs in the top 10. Stefanski won coach of the year twice over him. I mean, and I'm not going to make any points anyone else has not put made, right? Like he coached Rodgers. You know, how does he get the credit for this? He coached Rodgers. Like, I'm not even going to go look what Rodgers did after him. I'm going with knowing what we know about Rodgers and some of the way that went, the fact that he got Rodgers to buy into that offense and run that offense and win a couple MVPs out of running that offense. I mean, that's huge. Like just the fact that he got that buy-in there and was able to get that offense humming.
Really quick. Do you know and I know you do, but do you have any idea how horribly that thing could have gone? Like I think,
yep.
Imagine first of all, it was Josh McDaniels. And like that, can you imagine how the McDaniels Rodgers thing would have gone? Can you imagine just for a second? But secondly, I think Matt deserves so much credit in that first season for bringing in a handful of his concepts, and probably a little bit more than a handful, but you get my point of like some of his concepts, but really letting Aaron have probably about half of the offense still be his, what he likes, and taking a lot of stuff that he didn't like, even though that I think Matt loved it and would have liked to have had more stuff in it. Just letting Aaron kind of have that some of that flexibility still and giving him some autonomy within the offense to do that. And then in the second year in 2020, to get somehow miraculously Aaron to fully buy in and basically make it like 95% Matt's offense. Maybe it's a little bit less, but like to be a huge chunk and to have him just crush it and go out and win an MVP and have it really look like what we were hoping it could be, like this Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay offense, but with Aaron Rodgers, the MVP quarterback running it. And it was glorious. And then every year after that, there was a little bit more of Aaron taking it back and Aaron taking it back and Aaron until, you know, eventually that the divorce happened. But how he managed that situation at the onset to get that buy-in in the first place and to not overwhelm him. And I thought it was a real masterclass in how to be a first-time head coach, never a head coach at any level, and to get that Aaron with the strong-willedness, to just put it that way, and to get him to, I thought it was wonderfully done.
Well, and you, I mean, I was going to ask you if you remember, of course you remember, Andy, LaFleur's introductory press conference. So the talk was like, is he going to have what it takes to like lead this team with Aaron Rodgers? He's a very nervous. It's hard to remember now because it was so long ago, and like how he is at the podium now, he was like stuttering. Like
it was so in my mind,
he was like sweating. I don't know if he was sweating.
Like, whether he was or wasn't, the indicator was just like, this is the one of the most nervous, at least it wasn't Adam Gaze, like looking around the room thing, but it was as nervous of an interview as I can remember.
Yeah, and yeah, and like you said, he came in. I mean, I know you've seen the playbook and that was like the 2019 Packers playbook. That was LaFleur like installing that. And then you watch the 2019 offense. You said 50-50. I think it was 70-30 Rodgers. Like vast majority of that playbook was not used. It looks much more like the 2020 playbook when, like you said, Rodgers bought in. So even beyond that, and you get the love stuff, you get this pasture with Malik Willis, like what he did with crafting those game plans and sticking to that with Willis. I think one of my early issues with LaFleur was some of the game plan, some of the in-game adjustment stuff. I mean, I think some of his sequencing was usually pretty good, but he did have some issues. If he had something that was working, he wouldn't necessarily lean on that. Like he kind of wanted to just burn through all the plays. He's gotten so good almost this past year, almost to a detriment of game planning, like game plan specific. And I have a theory about that, but
I did too. I want to hear yours because I have one too.
All right. I think it was when Saleh came in. Saleh came in, and it was not until Saleh came in that there was some of the, like, we didn't expect this team to do this. And I think what it was, because Saleh was offensive assistant, I think Saleh was giving huge in-depth looks at the defense. LaFleur was saying, all right, man, we're going to do everything, like, based on that, because we got this, you know, we got incredible defensive mind in here. And then when they threw a curveball, they couldn't adjust to it. Because we didn't see that until like the second half of the season. So, I think that's something he can grow and learn from a little bit more. But I just think what he did with Willis crafting those, I mean, that spinner stuff came out of nowhere. You think of that, like some of that stuff was like, some of it was in the playbook. Some of that's in the playbook. The two back spinner stuff, I don't think I'd ever seen before. And to install that like week of and run an entire offense out of that. And it wasn't like one or two plays. Like we saw that. What was the, remember the Wildcat stuff with like Ronnie Brown and stuff? They had like five plays. They just ran it different ways. This was not that. Like that was a whole arsenal of stuff. That was different play calls for on a week. There was the whole thing.
With a quarterback that had only been there 2 weeks or like a week and a half at that point.
Yeah. He wouldn't even been there. That's right. Yeah. That's right. It was like 20 days or something. I think after he got there, there's the whole thing about like, remember O'Connell, when it was O'Connell had like Josh Dobbs and he was like, oh, yeah, he's just describing for him what to do. This was like that, but he installed it week up. That's insane to be able to get guys to do that. And the buy-in and for that stuff to operate as well as it did is incredible. And then the bigger thing to me, as the season went on, Willis was there 2 weeks. Love comes back in. This stuff was working well. That run game was in. They strip it all out again because Love can't do it because he can't move. He can't pivot on his knee. He can't do the spinner stuff because he literally can't spin. And then when he got better, they kind of worked that stuff back in. Like that feel for, I mean, if I think of coaching, you think of, you know, the guys in front of you, what can the guys in front of you do? What can I do with the guys on the field? That is the epitome of who are these guys? Some of them wildly different. What can I do with these guys? And not even what can I do with them? What is a guy in this current state? What's this guy capable of? And winning with that and doing what, well, I think it was a number four offense by DVOA this past year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just this year, but I think everything he's done since he's been in Green Bay, I don't know how you leave him out of the top 10. And I mean, yeah, you had, yeah, Stefanski, get out of here with Stefanski, man. No, we don't need to talk ourselves into this, man. I'm perfectly fine with Stefanski, but no, man, we don't need to do this.
Yeah. Top 10 easily for me. No question about it. Going back to my theory for a second, it's less to do with any one specific thing and more just to do with, I think Matt gets really geeked out about finding weaknesses in opposing defenses and puts game plans in knowing how he can affect those defenses. Cause I think he's really good. If he knows what's coming, mm-hmm. I mean, he can pick apart any defense in the world. I think for Matt, there just needs to be a little bit more of, instead of what does that team do bad, what do we do good? What do we do well?
Yep.
And I think if he could just lean a little bit more into, we're going to run our stuff, or we're going to have a couple of these things in our arsenal that we can pull off at some point if they show what we expect them to show, we're golden for that. And maybe you run it at the right time. But there's always that philosophy of, do you kind of run what the other team is bad against, or do you run what you're good at? And I think they need to have a little bit more intentionality and just doing what they do well and in sequencing it and running it rather than just trying to take advantage of what the weaknesses are in the opposing defense. And to me, that's one thing that Matt can continue to work on. He knows, again, more about football than I'll ever, you know, and you know, he knows more in a day than I know in my lifetime, but I still think there's a little bit more something there where just focus on your strengths a little bit more rather than the opposing team's weaknesses. We'll be right back.
Yeah, no, I like that theory a lot. That makes a lot of sense. It's not even like some coaches, I think it's Ali Connolly that calls them like ego coaches, where it's like, I want to show you this cool thing that I drew up. I don't think it's that, but I do like that theory that it is just, we can beat this with this. Yeah, but should you?
Yeah. I Bo Ryan back in the day, the former Badgers basketball coach, he would start with his starting lineup no matter what team he was going against. You basically saying like, we're starting with our starting five. This is who we are. We're going to go out there and we're going to try to execute what we're good at. And then 2 minutes in, if he recognized, all right, they're in a much smaller, you know, system and we have to be able to match up with that. All right, we're going to make the alterations that we need to at that point. But it was a mindset thing of, we're going to come out, be who you're going to have to adjust. We're going to try to make it so that you have to adjust to us first before we have to adjust to you. And again, it might be 2 minutes in that you know immediately you have to make that adjustment, but it's just an overall mindset of, this is who we are. We're unapologetic about it. And we're going to try our best to be who we want to be. And if we can't, we'll make that quick adjustment. I think there could be a little bit more of that from Matt. All right, kind of moving on, just a couple quick ones before I get you out of here. First of all, there's a lot of really fun, unique, interesting, maneuverable pieces, maybe Javon Bullard, Colin Oliver, Luke Musgrave, Isaiah Simmons, Marshawn Lloyd, just a wide range of like outcomes of where these players could end up in this upcoming season. Savion Williams, I'll let you go any direction that you want. One of these interesting, unique kind of X factor type players that you're either just excited to see, or you think you have a high hope in, or whatever, again, whatever direction you want to go in.
I had too many, but I'll go one offense, one defense,
okay.
Maybe two defense, one offense. Edge Cooper for sure. Like Edge Cooper in year two, what does that look like? Is he, cause they mess around with him a little, you know, you did a lot of the mugging stuff when they did that sim pressure and he's sitting in the A gap and he dropped back and he's really good at that. They sent him on some blitzes and stuff like that. Do they lean into some of that more in terms of the sim pressures and the blitzes? That dude's a demon coming off a twist. Yeah. Do they do that a little more? I mean, they did that pretty well already. Do they move him around the formation a little more? You know, cause he was not healthy and then they ramped him up. And then as soon as they ramped him up, he got hurt and they ramped up again. So if he's able to do a full season, how does that look? Do they move him around? I mean, he's just an absolute freak, insane intelligence. I mean, just coming in year one as a linebacker, doing what he did, something like the mirroring of the running back and closing and the coverage and like all the stuff that he was able to do from year one. What does that look like now if they feel like they can unlock him a little bit more? So I'm excited to see that. I mean, Colin Oliver for sure. I don't know how often he's going to be out there, but I mean, my eyes are going to be on him every time he's out there. If it's third and nine, my eyes are locking on Colin Oliver. He's so much fun, dude. He is so small, but he is so much fun. And then, I mean, I mentioned him earlier as Marshawn Lloyd. I mean, if he can stay healthy, he was like a lot last year, man. Like it's just everything just hit him at the same time. So I think I'm very excited. I'm very, very excited about Lloyd again, because it is, they were so good last year in the run game. And Jacobs made them right, even times when the line was not.
Yep.
But it was still time. There was a lack of high end speed there. I mean, he was Jacobs between the tackle, Jacobs on the outside. I don't think the first guy ever brought him down. Like he was getting so many yards he shouldn't have got, but there was very few like huge breakaway runs. Like Lloyd can hit a gear and be gone out of the gate. Like that's an absolute home run explosive without having to do a whole lot. And so if he hits just him on the field, just the stuff that they can even do with him formationally, whether that's some of the jet sweep stuff. I was looking at some stuff they could do with him there. Could be so much fun. Just the athleticism he brings to that position. I mean, they've not had speed. Like even Jones, like, you know, Aaron Jones was great, but Aaron Jones was never like a burner. Like he was, quick, but like open field, not fast. They've not had a guy this fast in a very long time. So I'm excited to see him.
It's funny because last year, I think it was Matt LaFleur got asked a question about trying to generate more explosives through the passing game. And just like without hesitation, he brought up having Marshawn Lloyd in, like, that he would like to have in the backfield to get more of those explosives, just in whether it be, it could be via a screen or whatever, but it was more of like, even in the run game, we feel like there's opportunity there, and they just never got the opportunity to really utilize that. I think he can be a really big game changer and just a game breaker in moments. Obviously has to have those opportunities, has to stay healthy in college, hanging onto the football, pass pro, are certainly things that he's going to have to work on at an NFL level to get out on the field more. But man, Dusty, I'm telling you wholeheartedly, there were very much times in training camp last year that he looked like the best running back in camp. And as I've said before, I think a little bit of that is Josh Jacobs knowing how to ramp up during training camp and maybe not give quite everything early on in camp and things like that. But I digress. There was still real legitimate days where Marshawn Lloyd looked like the best running back at camp. And I'm sticking to that. And hopefully we can see a little bit more of that in 2025. Just really quick, what are you looking forward to most? Like the season is always like the ultimate like litmus test of like, you have a theory on something, you think something's going to happen, and then the season tests it out. What are you most looking forward to learning from anything as we get into this actual season?
I mean, right now I'm looking to see if I'm right about the power spread stuff, if that is something they lean into. I'm looking to see if we've seen, not in Green Bay. Well, I mean, we have though, some of the rookies, like I want to see if Golden is that dude, not that dude, but like a very good productive receiver from the jump. Can they put that dude outside and just be like, because they need a man beater, right? And they hope Golden's that guy from day one. Can they stick him out there and be like, all right, you're going to do this? And maybe he's not, you know, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, the way those guys exploded, but we've seen rookie wide receivers come on the scene and be good. And they kind of need him to be good in a specific way. Can he do that? Can he do the thing? I don't know what they're hoping he does this year. Personally, I'm hoping he does. And I mean, I got to assume that they hope he does as well. For sure. I don't know how much faith they're putting in that. So can he be one of those guys out of the gate that is just, all right, man, you are, I mean, if not elite, top 20 wide receiver, like by week 8 or something like that. Can we get there? Can we do something like that? So, and then, I mean, on the defensive side, I don't even know what to expect. Like, I am so excited. I was so happy about Hafley and what he did down the stretch. He, you know, came into the year and you watch, I mean, you're something wrong with your brain the way there's something wrong with my brain. You watched Ohio State, you watched 4 years of BC tape. Like, I thought I had a pretty good idea of what he did. Now I will say, like, his last year at BC, there was more split field stuff than single high. But the thought was, if he's got the horses, he wants to go 4 on the off defensive line, and he wants to go single high. Like, that's what he's going to want to do. A lot of spot drop zone, a lot of man. And he tried that early and it didn't really work. Him adjusting as fast as he did and leaning into like some of the trends of the league, all that sim pressure stuff. I don't know what the blitz numbers were, but those aren't going to tell the whole story because he was bringing 4. He just didn't know where he was going to bring
it. It was the second lowest blitz rate in the league. Because again, to your point, it's showing blitz or it's maybe bringing a quote unquote blitzer off the edge, but dropping somebody somewhere else. So it's just still 4 guys. I was shocked when I saw that they were the second. Like, I did a double take, make sure I was on the right year, made sure I was on, like, I didn't believe it, but it's second lowest per Pro Football Reference. That was,
well, that was the weird thing with Joe Barry. Joe Barry always ranked high, but it's because he had 5 man lines and all 5 of them would come on a rush. So it counted as a blitz, but it wasn't a blitz. It was just 5 man rushing. Rush, so how much more does Hafley lean into that? What does he do if he's got a healthy Evan Williams, Xavier McKinney, Oladapo, and Bullard? Like, with those guys, I mean, I don't know what Oladapo is going to do. The one game he started and played, I thought he was terrific. So if you can mix and match those guys and you've got some sim pressure stuff, you can play around with some of the front a little bit more with Edge Cooper. And now you've got, you know, Burrell, and Oliver. What can you do with all those guys? Like, I'm so excited to see what this defense looks like in year 2, because I didn't know what to expect in year 1. And the way he shifted and changed and what that unit became down the backstretch was incredible. So I'm looking forward to seeing what that unit looks like.
The number one thing that I took away from his initial press conference was him talking about how he is adaptable to not only the players that he has on his team that has access to, but like, he's like, hey, if somebody's better at standing up as an edge rusher, well, we're going to stand him up. And talking about like, if somebody's better in this coverage or whatever, he was going to be able to mold his defense to that. But also based on what teams he was playing against, what he like, that to me, the adaptability was the number one takeaway from that first press conference. And man, did he show it in a major way. Cause I was with you. I was not necessarily expecting that style of defense, but he adapted it quick and it was phenomenal. And I'm excited to see what the next evolution of that is this upcoming year. Dusty, you have me ready like, I cannot wait now. How am I supposed to wait till September after this conversation for the first football game? I'm dreaming of football games in bed as we speak, because I am ready now, I think more than ever, for this season to start and us getting some of the answers to these really fun questions as we move forward. I know you're going to be working on a ton of stuff, acmepackingcompany.com, as well as I'm sure a bunch of other places. I know you mentioned potentially starting your Patreon back up. So what do you got cooking, and where can we find all of your incredible work?
Yeah. So, Wednesday Pack a Day with Steve and Sarah. So we'll be doing that. The Acme Packing, I think the next, so I did the whole power spread stuff. I think next stuff I'm doing over there at the very least is going to be looking around the league. I pulled a bunch of clips already in terms of, teams like the Eagles, the Colts, kind of dipping into college a little bit, these teams that run this stuff. What can the Packers do? One of my favorite things to do is to see what other teams around the league are doing. And then if it's something that's cool, how can the Packers steal it? I mean, years ago, this was like a steal this whole cloth. And now it's more, okay, who do they have? Would this work? How does this build into? And so I'm going to be building some of that stuff out over the next few weeks. It's basically a way for me to write about non-Packers teams, but put in a Packers way. So it's a good way for me to kind of scratch that itch. And so that'll be going up Acme Pack. I think of the next probably 3 or 4 weeks, that'll be what I'll be doing. It's just, hey, look at this cool play. This is what the Packers can do with it if they go power spread. So I've already dug into that and just need to write it up. And I'm excited about those pieces. Those should be fun.
For the radio show, they want me obviously to focus on the Packers because that's what I do, and it's the Packers radio show. But being in Milwaukee, every once in a while, I want to talk Brewers or talk Bucks. So I have to figure out a way how I can talk Bucks and Brewers for like 15 minutes and then be like, and this relates to the Packers. Because so I've been very good lately at finding ways to relate things just that I want to talk about in general on the radio and then bringing it back to the Packers in some obscure way at the end. So I know exactly what you mean. Talk about what you love and then figure out a way to spin it afterwards. I cannot thank you enough for not only coming on today, but all the incredible work that you do covering the Packers. And of course, Steve, Sarah on the Wednesday team as well. You guys are awesome. I cannot get through episodes without bursting out laughing in all the best ways on numerous occasions. And it's just the ultimate, like, what I always love about the Pack-A-Day teams that we have is every team does bring something different to the table. And just my level of enjoyment of listening to the three of you, because you can tell the bond that the three of you have and the connection that the three of you have. And it just comes like off in like the absolute best way of like nerdy football conversation, but like as you're picking on each other and like, it just, I don't even know how to explain it, but the chemistry is so much so that I just feel like I'm at a table of people, of friends talking football. And I couldn't ask for anything more. So I cannot thank you enough for all that you do. Follow them, of course, on social media at Dusty Evely, correct? Yep. And then, of course, acmepackingcompany.com. You do incredible work, and we'll definitely do this again very soon.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Andy. Always good to talk ball with you, dude.
You bet. That's at Dusty Evely. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. Of course, the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.